For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome, I'm Moshe Ferber.
And I am Ariel Munafon.
And this is the Silver Lining Podcast, a podcast about security architecture.
We are here at Silver Lining, a new podcast co-hosted by me, Ariel Munafon, and Moshe Ferber. We will talk about cloud security, cloud computing, and try to give the knowledge to every people that we can.
Excellent. Good morning. This is Moshe. Thank you, Ariel, for the intro. So we are here at the Silver Lining podcast, the podcast that will bridge between information security professionals and cloud computing professionals. Since most of the infrastructure is now moving to the cloud, we know that security people and the cloud professionals need to go hand in hand to cope with those challenges, because the infrastructure and the applications are now one bundle that is very hard to distinguish, and everybody got their role in the shared responsibility model of the cloud. And in this podcast, we're going to focus on architecture, application security, challenges when dealing with software as a service. And for today's guest, we're going to talk, which I'm going to introduce you in a second, we're going to talk about the hottest thing in architecture, which is serverless computing. And this is where I bring in Ori Segal, co-founder and CTO for PureSec, the leading at serverless security. He's going to talk to us about challenges with serverless. Ori, good morning. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, how are you doing?
Perfect. So we're going to jump ahead. So I would really like to hear from you a little bit more about what is serverless. I mean, I recently just finished struggling with understanding what containers are, and suddenly, okay, now containers are passé, and it's old technology, this is for old people, and everybody now talking about serverless. And please allow me to say that I need to better understand this concept, and can you please assist and let me know also what PureSec is doing in this area?
Of course. I guess let's start with the beginning, with what is serverless, because it's a funny issue. Any person you ask will give you a completely different opinion of what is serverless. And actually, there is a big, conflict or debate, I guess, between people in the industry about what exactly is serverless. I think the most common notion on what serverless is that you simply don't manage the infrastructure anymore. You don't have to deploy anything on servers. So you write your own code, you deploy it to the cloud. The cloud provider is then responsible for executing it based on event triggers. And at no point in time you have to manage capacity or pay for idle. So there's basically no infrastructure.
I think that a good phrase to say about serverless is, if you don't use, you don't pay. This is the pure, I think.
So that's one aspect. But if you look at it, we all go back to the definition of function as a service. And I'm not sure that everyone agrees that function as a service is indeed what serverless is. In theory, maybe the ideology behind serverless is that you don't deal with infrastructure, you don't deal with servers, you deploy something in the most abstract way possible, and that thing runs, and you don't care about the infrastructure.
So if I say the difference between function as a service and serverless is?
That's, again, a big debate.
Okay.
But when people in the street, if they know what serverless is, think about serverless, they think about function as a service. Yes, that's the most common definition, I guess.
Okay.
So if I want to try to emphasize this and try to basically tell where we stand, we're talking about platform as a service. In platform as a service, we already know that there is managed databases, managed content delivery network. You can put your data in a database that you don't manage. You can put your web files, your static files, your index.html on the CDN network. Now, the application logic was always something that you need to deal with, and this is usually where you deploy serverless. Now, mm-hmm. the basic idea is that you can run your code and you don't have to worry, A, about the infrastructure beneath,
yeah.
patching it, hardening it, securing it. Second, you don't have to worry about scalability. It doesn't matter if you run this function once a month or 100 times in a second. The provider is responsible for this runtime environment.
Right, so it's basically the highest abstraction of cloud compute that you can think of. So everything is managed by the cloud provider. You hand the code, the logic, the configurations, and everything else is managed. It will run when it needs to run, and you don't have to worry about the infrastructure anymore.
Okay, so I understand, definitely, and we understand the advantages. The disadvantages, not talking from security side for a second, is that you have to program this at specific languages, right? At specific formats. You lose a little bit of the flexibility. Am I correct?
Actually, now you can pretty much run any language, especially since AWS came out with the runtime API at the last reInvent conference, mm-hmm. Meaning that you can bring your own language. And other providers support similar ways to, or different ways to achieve similar things. So you can pretty much run any language. I've even heard of people doing COBOL as serverless functions today. I think the main issue with serverless is the mind shift that you need to do. It's a completely different paradigm of how you compute, how you do compute. The fact that you don't control the infrastructure makes a lot of difference. Obviously, there are a lot of pros for that, but there are also limitations. So different type of CI/CD, different type of testing that you need to do, better understanding of cloud native environments and how to deploy in those environments. There's a lot of changes. So I wouldn't call that a con. It's not a negative thing, but it is a shift that you need to do in the mindset of your organization. So it's a cultural change that you will have to go through.
If looking at from the programmer side, you don't need to, you don't care about compute, that you pay the duration and the memory that you use.
Right. That's why I believe, and most people agree, that serverless is a movement that came from developers. Just like containers came from DevOps, it made more sense for DevOps people not to worry about servers and have a repeatable continuous process that they can deploy containers. Serverless came from developers. That if you think about it, the people that gain the most from serverless, pardon me, are developers. They are not bound to any IT infrastructure, IT teams. They don't have to report to anyone. They can simply deploy applications continuously all the time.
Okay, amazing. So we understand the pros, we understand a little bit about the cons, and let's talk security now. So mm-hmm. if I develop in the same language that I develop my traditional functions, my traditional environment, what is the new thing here? What kind of new threats do we have? I mean, what am I looking at here?
So let's start about what's different. First of all, you have to think about breaking down your application to small bits, to functions, basically. You want to package them in the smallest package possible, logically speaking. I think by nature, you have to think about microservices and even nanoservices format for your application. You have to stop thinking about monolith application and start thinking about how you break things down. Each serverless function needs to encompass only, the minimal logic, very focused logic, and then you build, dozens, hundreds of functions that eventually build the entire application. You have to think about the fact that you're talking about event-driven programming, which is also something very basic in today's serverless environments. What events are going to trigger your functions, how the functions are going to handle the events, how functions are chained together, and how you configure this whole thing. There's a lot of cloud-native configuration required in order to make this thing work properly. From a security perspective, I think we are seeing a few, not issues, but things that are, require consideration. First of all, the wide range of event trigger sources that can trigger functions is much bigger than what we knew until today. So if you talk to a web application security expert today, they are used to looking for malicious input in parameters, in cookies, in headers. With serverless functions and the richness of the event triggers that can trigger functions, you're suddenly finding yourself with all sorts of weird inputs to the application that you're not used to inspecting. Think about a function that wakes up when an S3 bucket gets changed. Somebody drops a file in a bucket and that triggers a function. So what do you inspect here? The file name, the attributes of the file, what comes in the event that triggers the function? Sometimes this can be IoT device telemetry in protocols like MQTT or WebSockets, for example. And then you have to start inspecting things in protocols that you're not necessarily ready to inspect. You can't deploy a web application firewall for that. That's not the right protocol. So the input vector can be potentially more rich and more, more diverse and more sophisticated for inspection. And the second problem with input validation is the fact that you can't deploy anything on the infrastructure. And this is where we need to take a stop and discuss. The most, trivial thing in serverless is that you don't own the infrastructure. For you, there is no infrastructure, right? It's just logic that you deploy to the cloud. Given there's no infrastructure, how do you deploy security solutions? Think about installing a web application firewall, for example, or a runtime application self-protection, a RASP, which requires you to deploy an agent that instruments the application, or going more traditional with next-gen firewall, IDS, IPS, endpoint prevention solutions. All of these tools require you to deploy something physically on the infrastructure or on the network, either on the server to inspect bad behavior, or to sense what is going on in the network if there are anomalies, but you don't control the network. For you, there is no network. There are no servers. You cannot deploy these solutions. And so this is, again, a shift that people need to do. They need to find a solution that is cloud native by, from the ground up. You need to find a solution that can be deployed in those environments given that there is no environment. And this is where PureSec, this is why we founded PureSec, with the understanding that you need something that comes from the cloud native environment rather than from the old world of networks and servers.
Okay, amazing. I know that you've been working with the Cloud Security Alliance and the Israeli chapter of the Cloud Security Alliance to create the top threats document for the serverless environment, which is amazing. And I hope to get to see it soon. This is a major contribution for the community.
Yeah, thank you.
And can you maybe summarize for us the families of threats that we're dealing here, and why is it different again from developing my regular PHP or Python or regular functions?
Right. So the document actually originates from a previous document that we published at PureSec last year in January 2018, called the Serverless Security Top 10 Risks. That document was very, very successful. However, we felt that it was time to contribute it to the community and refresh it for 2019. There's a lot of new knowledge that was accumulated, and we wanted to collaborate with other members of the CSA Israel chapter. And so we basically rewrote and re-edited and added a lot of new contents to the document. The importance of the document is critical to the success of serverless, because organizations or corporations and enterprises will only adopt a technology once it's mature, and a part of the maturity process is having security tutorials, security guides. I think it's critical to the adoption of serverless that people will actually use this document, not only for security, but for them to feel that the technology reached the maturity point. Looking at the top 10, and really we don't have a lot of time to go into all the families or all the classes of issues, I did manage to somehow categorize them into three main categories of issues. The first one are issues that are related to the design of the application, the architecture itself, how you you know, stitch things together, the logic, the business logic behind the application. The second family is code level issues, so implementation, bad implementation. You can think about, you know, event data injection attacks, or insecure third-party dependencies, which is a very hot topic these days as well. And the last family of issues are cloud-native configuration issues. So once you made the design correct and you implemented everything correctly, you can still screw up in the configuration. And in cloud, configuration problems are probably one of the biggest risks, or I guess pitfalls, that people will run into. We see it today already with all those publicly open S3 buckets, for example. So cloud configuration is going to be a big issue moving forward from now on.
So if you know, we talk that you say that it came, serverless came from the developers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you, as we know, then developers doesn't care too much about security most of the time. Okay,
nobody cares about security unless their job is at risk. Yeah.
So we give now more responsibility to the developers, and sometimes you talk about enterprise and big companies. The CISO, the security chief person, maybe doesn't know about you know, serverless and cloud security. So how do you think companies should attack this this issue?
Yeah, I guess it's a hot and it's a complex topic to talk about, but let's take it you know, in bite-sized chunks. So first of all, yes, serverless comes is a movement that I guess started from developers, and I think that it's not only that developers don't care about security. Really, nobody cares about security unless their job is at risk or there's something to lose, right? Nobody starts a new company and says, security is a terrific feature that I need in my app. This is one of the critical things I want to deliver. No, security is enforced either through regulation or because you're afraid to lose your job or damage your corporate brand and so forth. So at the end of the day, developers do what they are required to do. There are requirement documents. There are stories in Jira or in whatever agile development method they're using. The product manager is responsible for the requirements. So if security will be a requirement for developers, developers will do security. If security is not a requirement, nobody's going to do security, right?
Okay.
So it's really not about the fact that developers are at the wheel or more in control in serverless is not relevant to whether or not they're going to implement security, because they develop what they're told to develop. And we have to make sure that security is a part of the requirements for every project. That's how we're going to achieve secure development. I think that the main difference, or maybe serverless is a facilitator for the shift left movement. If you think about it, now you have a team that is mostly the team that is mostly responsible for developing projects are developers, DevOps, and maybe DevSecOps. We hope for for that to happen. And so these teams will have to handle security. The IT security teams, the traditional IT security teams, are going to find it very hard to be a part of this mix. They're going to have to, again, do some kind of shift. They're going to have to be more involved in the daily scrums, the daily meetings. They will have to, join the requirements definition phase and make sure that everybody adheres to corporate security policies. But the old way, where they are a gate at the end of the process, is long gone.
Like Moshe said at the beginning, this should be a shared responsibility model, not only in the cloud, but also working as a team.
Correct. Yes.
So taking you back to the threats, Ori, I mean, okay, so we understand that programmers need to be more involved. This is true for every cloud aspect, not only. I understand, you talked about design problems, code level problems, and cloud native problems. Now we understand the cloud native problems. As you mentioned, configuration is always the biggest issue, S3 buckets you mentioned. Yesterday I heard a lecture from AWS somebody from the support and security of AWS, he said that 8 out of 9 incidents in AWS involve somebody uploading their AWS credentials to GitHub. And so again, if you upload your credentials, no serverless security would help you. I would like to hear a little bit more about specific cloud native problems related to serverless. I mean, not the trivial one like S3 buckets and the API keys. Also for the code level, again, is it different from what we're doing, or the same tools that we're using, the same methodologies can help? If you can give us some example on the code level. And of course, the what things we should look for in the design phase. And after that, we're going to talk a little bit more about the controls on how the companies should deal with this, talking about from the person, people point of view, process, and of course, technology point of view.
Yeah, so let's start with, I guess, what is different other than the richness and the of the input vectors, as I mentioned. There are other problems, for example, open source libraries that you bring in. So this is a common problem in other types of application, right? You trust open source libraries. You don't really know where they're coming from or whether or not they're secure. But in normal environments, you have more control about making sure that they're behaving normally. So you can make sure that they're not communicating outbound and leaking credentials, for example, because you control the network. You can block outbound connectivity. That's not the case in serverless again. You're running in someone else's container or runtime environment. You're not in control of the networking. You definitely can't install anything to, or you couldn't install anything to make sure that these libraries don't steal anything or run Bitcoin mining processes for that matter.
Is that a true story, by the way? Somebody managed to fool a serverless function to Bitcoin for him?
I did. Yeah, we published a white paper last year called Serverless Crypto Jacking, where we actually managed to leverage a vulnerability in a function to execute code, which was a Bitcoin miner. Now, the special thing about this that we could essentially call the same function over and over for, until you hit the concurrency limits, which is by default 1,000 concurrent functions. And so we basically, through one vulnerability, managed to replicate the Bitcoin miner to run on 1,000 different instances at the same time, basically generating more CPU power for us. So again, this is not a limitation or a weakness of the platform itself. It all boils down to your own code. Is your code secure? So going back to your question, and you have to remind me the different sections of the question because it was a very long one.
We're not talking about the three families of threats that you're talking about, the design, the code, the design vulnerabilities, the code level weaknesses, and the cloud native misconfigurations. And I was asking for a bit of examples for regarding
All right, servers. Terrific. So another common issue that we are seeing is with how you sequence these functions. So you have to remember that your applications are usually not a single function with a single event trigger, but rather something more like a state machine where, let's say, an HTTP request comes in that triggers the API gateway to send an event to a function that puts something in a bucket that then triggers another function. It's a whole state machine. Usually people will code this. The environments give you ways to encode state machines like that, like AWS step functions, for example, which allows you to actually define a state machine with the rules of what happens when something happens. The problem is that how do you enforce the normal flow of the application? In a regular application, when a user comes in, that's the path they have. They can only take one path. In serverless, if you don't protect each and every function and make sure that you enforce the flow, somebody can mess with your business flow and maybe enter the application in the middle, maybe invoke a function from the side. So that's another risk.
When we start talking about what the organization should do. I mean, you touched a little bit this now and then. Let's try to see. And again, I'm looking at what kind of training or what kind of knowledge should the people have. I'm looking at how you change your process in order to cope with this. And again, if there are technology measures that you can use in order to cope with those.
So I think you know, we've been talking about a lot of negative things until now, and it's a good time to, because you just asked about the, you know, the differences, and it's a good time to point out a very important thing about serverless, and that is the fact that on the one hand, you don't have access to the infrastructure, you don't manage the infrastructure. On the other hand, you don't manage the infrastructure. So there's a lot of benefit from security perspective. Think about all those patches that you have to deploy to servers and operating systems and third-party, you know, components that you're using. All of that is gone. Networking security, for example. So I think last week we published a blog. It's also going to be on dark reading, showing all the different tasks, security tasks that today you have to manage in normal server full environments or even container environments. And then showing how I think the majority of these issues are not yours to worry about anymore. So from a security perspective, I would say that the starting point for an organization that's adopting serverless is much, much better than before. You know, going back to the silver lining name for the podcast, I don't know if that will stick. Good luck with that, by the way. Mm-hmm. But it's not all danger. Actually, serverless is bringing, I think, a very optimistic idea or optimistic, you know, I don't know how to say it, a vibe to the security world. Mm-hmm. Someone else is now responsible for securing the infrastructure, and that someone else is a much better expert and has much more resources than you ever had in managing the security of the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So AWS or Azure or Google Cloud Functions have much better security teams that are deploying patches constantly. If you take down, if you look at what was the name of a Meltdown and Spectre, mm-hmm. You know, it was published, and the morning after, all the AWS infrastructure was already patched. I'm guessing that it will take even more than 10 years from now to see organizations patching their infrastructure, right? Mm-hmm. So I would say that from a security perspective, if you're a CISO, adopting serverless is actually taking a lot of the worries away. And I think that at the end of the day, the CISOs should or CISOs should want to migrate to serverless because of those benefits. And so that's one thing. But you do have to think about the mind shift of what you need to do when you adopt serverless, because it's not, okay, lift and shift. Let's take our application and push it to serverless and it will work. That's not going to happen. You need to think about how you develop for these platforms. What is the right pipeline, CI/CD pipeline? How do you adopt a cloud native mindset? Are your teams ready to adopt serverless? Do you have the right tools, the right knowledge? This is completely new. Yeah. So there are a lot of different things that you need to consider, you know, when it comes to security and development. As I said, things are, you know, are much, much better, but also much, much different. And I, you know, some of the things that I would point out is testing. That's very challenging. How do you test serverless applications? You know, for security, obviously, but also for QA reasons. How do you test cloud native environments? So that's a very different. The deployment tools that you've been using, I don't know what kind of CI environment are you using, or Jenkins or CodeCheap or, you know, whatever. You need to find something that matches cloud native environments. And obviously your teams need to understand the risks. I guess the whole cycle of protecting functions, you know, from the development stage and ongoing, you know, monitoring functions needs to obviously change dramatically as well.
And if you look now at the tools that the, you know, that the global cloud computing providers give us, there are at the step that we can trust them, or still there is a way to go?
It's a good point. Cloud providers make a lot of effort to build tools. You can see, for example, AWS has a code build and a code pipe, or I don't remember the name. However, organizations don't want to always, you know, drop the tools that they are already using. Your organization is using certain tools. if you can continue using these tools for a serverless environment, and we see these tools evolving as well, then I'm assuming that that's going to be the path that most organizations will feel comfortable taking. However, yes, these tools are already mature. They've been around for some years. Yeah, so they do provide everything you need.
Okay, so let me try to, we're getting closer to the end, let me try to summarize this. So we got serverless, which is like the new hottest topic for a new architecture. It enables me to write my own functions and then simply run it without worrying about the scale, without worrying about the underlying infrastructure. I don't have to manage any servers, I don't have to patch anything, I don't have to harden anything, and most importantly, I don't have to buy or prepare for scaling. With all this good, or there's always the bad side of things, it increased my attack surface, right?
Not bad, different.
Different, sorry.
but it gives a lot of more wide of point of, you know, you talk about the surface that you need to protect.
It's a different surface. It depends whether it's big or small, depends on how you adopt the platform. But it is different, and it requires a change in the mindset of how you protect things. Yes.
Yeah, well, basically, we had some microphone glitch. So basically, I have a lot less infrastructure to manage, which means a lot less vectors that somebody can use. The attack surface is much lower, but I'm more dependent on how the way I code. I mean, my security comes down to the skills of coding of my developers, which is basically true for any platform as a service environment. But it's double true for the serverless environment. So again, investing in my programmers' security knowledge, how they code, invest in the way that we configure the cloud. Again, this is always true. Most of the vulnerabilities will be based on misconfiguration. And invest in the right procedures, which is basically the right pipeline that can also make sure that I'm writing good code. We're talking about the regular testing, static analysis, dynamic analysis, and basically make sure that I deploy the code correctly and making sure that nobody intervenes with my services. Basically, this means authentication between services and make sure my access controls are pretty tight. And again, this is all comes with the benefits of not managing anything, but I'm very much dependent on my application stack, which is, by the way, application security is the hardest thing in information security. It's the hardest thing to get right.
Yeah, you make it sound as if, okay, there's a lot that went away, and now you have a very small chunk to handle, but that small chunk is a world of, it's a cosmos of its own. So, you know, looking at the difference in, we talked about the shared responsibility model, how much responsibility is left to you. So if you try to compare this, let's say, to deploying on EC2 on your own instances, it used to be about 90% your responsibility, and then 10% maybe the cloud provider responsible for some compliance things and networking, etc. Now it's more equal, actually. So there's about 50% of the responsibilities that are still left on you, and 50% that went away, that's the cloud provider is now responsible for. As you mentioned, a lot of effort and focus around how you get the pipeline, the deployment to be secure, how to get the cloud native configuration resilient to attacks. There's a lot around IAM permissions now, identity and access management in the cloud. That's not an easy topic to tackle, and actually most organizations are struggling with this. It's a whole, you know, brave new world there, and functions, because of the way you program, because they're so granular, each function needs to have its own set of rights that allow it to only do what it's supposed to be doing, or else you find yourself in a situation where somebody can do lateral movement inside your cloud account, and that's not something you really want.
You're talking from the perspective of the IAM permissions who is accessing, but also from the permission of the IAM, sorry, from the point of view of permissions of the IAM, point of view of the IAM permissions that I give to the serverless functions, exactly, right? I give them their exactly. own permissions.
So when a function executes, it executes with some permissions. It needs permissions to access cloud resources. Mm-hmm. And which permissions do you give it is critical, because by default, everybody will give everything to the function, because who knows what the function needs to be doing. But in reality, you should be giving that function exactly the permissions it needs. If the function only writes to a database table, give it only the permissions to write to that specific table and nothing else. And that will help contain the damage in case somebody, managed to find the vulnerability and exploit it in a function. So there's a lot of differences and nuances that are specific to serverless. And just, to sort of summarize everything, I think we sort of skipped the cloud native protections, and I'm here as a vendor as well. So you need to look at cloud native security, specifically at serverless security platforms. If you want to secure serverless, you need a serverless security platform that is native to this environment, that understands how to inspect incoming events and how to enforce the right behavior of these functions, and to help you with secure deployments and asset management and all of these things. Yes.
Okay. And this brings me to my last comment today. If you want to secure a serverless function, you need to take the best practices from the cloud provider. And there's nothing general that you can speak about, because it's relatively new, right? Correct. You need to basically take the industry insights and the cloud provider guidelines. And
the CSA top risks guide.
What I'm saying here is that there isn't much good written material about platform as a service and serverless specifically. So be very prudent on the manuals or white papers that you read. Again, it's relatively new. We don't have enough written information. This is again why we thank you, Ori, for the contribution to the community, for the top threats document for the serverless. Okay, so we need to wrap things up. It was very fascinating, Ori. Good luck with your journey to secure serverless. Ariel, anything you want to add for closure?
I think that it was very interesting. So thank you, Ori.
Thank you.
And this is what I think that we are trying to do, is to bring professional security professionals that understand, and to try to share the information with other people. You say that it's new and it changes all the time. So this is what we need to share information and to help companies and personnel.
Great. And from my point of view, in this blog, we're going to focus on secure architecture. We're going to focus on application security. We're going to talk about the things that you do in your everyday life to your operational security. We're going to talk less about how to manage your information security at a very high level. We're going to talk really about the operations that you need to put in place in order to protect your infrastructure, how you build the architecture, what kind of tools do you need, what kind of security you need to embed into your services. Okay, I hope you enjoyed it, and we're closing this up, and we'll see you next week. Goodbye from all of us and at Silver Lining Podcast.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.